Buddy.
The flagship station for New York Yankees baseball. WFAN, WFAN FM, WFAN HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
I want to tell you a story, a personal story, and it will relate to tonight's Game 4 of the World Series. It was many years ago. I was hosting a radio show on XM Satellite. It was when it was just XM. And the guy who was on before me had a topic that day. And the topic was right up Tiki's alley. A guy by the name of Tommy Luby. I love that guy. He was a very nice guy. And he says to me, the topic of the day is, the Earth's about to end. What do you do? And so what he was going for on his radio show was, I'm going to go drinking. I'm going to go partying. I'm going to go do all this kind of crazy stuff. And when he asked me, I said, I'd start digging. And he said, well, what the hell does that mean? And I said, if you're telling me the world is going to end, I'm not one to just give up.
Right.
I'm one that's going to try something. And he says to me, but the digging isn't going to help. And I said, well, how the hell do you know? He's like, well, I'm telling you, the world's going to end. And I said, I get you're telling me the world's going to end. I get it.
Right.
But I'm still going to dig.
Not specifically how the world's going to end.
Right.
Just is going to end.
And I know that I'm going to try something to make sure the world doesn't end, even if the odds are overwhelming that the world is going to end. Now, why do I bring this up on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon in New York City? I bring it up because we all know, let's not beat around the bush, the odds are very high that the Yankee world is going to end. Maybe not tonight, maybe not even tomorrow, but the odds are very low that they're going to win this series. There's only been one team in the history of baseball to come back from 3-0. I'll leave that for a later date to talk about.
Yes.
So we all know that the odds, very similar to when my friend told me the world is going to end, okay, the world's going to end. So if I'm Aaron Boone, the question is, do you just go out drinking or do you dig?
And what's drinking? Keeping the same thing?
Just doing the same thing and like hoping things change.
Sean, I was disappointed. I thought we were going to have like a little bit of a scientific conversation.
Oh, is that what you thought it was coming?
I'm disappointed that he never once mentioned that he worked with a Tommy Luby before a Tommy Luby.
I know,
that's
right?
True. I never thought about that. Yeah, we called him TJ back then, So maybe I didn't even think about it.
And Tommy Luby would do the same thing I would do if the world was ending.
What's
so
that?
We're like money. A drink and go out party?
Find a deep sea submersible and go deep in the ocean as you possibly can because life and plants grow down there despite lack of sunlight.
See, that's a great idea, Deke.
Plants are down there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to dig to Sydney Sweeney's house.
So your answer would be you're going to try something to survive.
Yes, exactly.
So
right.
Is there something that Aaron Boone would do that's different? Like, just something. And I know that it's all construed as panic, but, like, they're down 3-0.
What do we think Aaron Boone is going to do?
Nothing!
I think he's going to do nothing.
Nothing!
Sean, do you think he's going to do something?
Absolutely not.
He's going to do...
Even a little thing. Even a... Flip, like we said yesterday, flip Soto and Judge.
Or lead off Aaron Judge, like I suggested.
Or lead off Aaron Judge. Or do something different.
Well,
the likelihood of that happening is so small.
Unless you count Trevino starting over Austin Wells.
But that's not a big thing.
I agree.
The problem is he could sit Verdugo, except he's the only one that got a hit.
I know. I know sitting Verdugo doesn't make sense when he hit the home run at the end of last night's game. I think what is going to be really interesting over the next hour, because we will get the Yankee lineup within an hour, is as they face elimination, do they try something now? I want to bring up a little bit of history. The last time the Yankees were down 3-0, and I unfortunately have brought this series up a lot lately, was the 2022 American League Championship Series. He did try something. Do you remember what it was? And I think it was significant. I think it counts as, hey, that was a significant like attempt to try to turn things around.
Was it switching the lineup or was it actually benching somebody?
It was actually benching somebody.
Huh.
It was making the decision of
I'm going to...
He benched IKF.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of remember that.
He basically said, this is not working with IKF, and I'm going to sit him. Now, he didn't do it when they were down 3-0. He actually did it before that, so it's not an exact comparison. But all year long, he had been loyal to IKF as my shortstop, IKF as my shortstop, and then finally made that move to Oswald Peraza. I don't think there's a move like that that's sitting there other than Dominguez.
What an unmemorable series.
No, I get you. But because Verdugo hit the home run
yesterday.
But
that's the danger of this World Series.
Yeah, is it becomes like that.
You just forget what happened or why Or just that the Dodgers were so much better, especially if they get swept. This will be so forgettable.
But you know why?
And memorable only for the fact that they got swept.
But you know why I think this is worse than the Astros?
And Judge, by the way.
Absolutely. This is worse to me than the Houston one because you could rationalize, as much as no one wanted to say it at the time, that the Astros had great pitching.
Yeah.
That Justin Verlander was a great pitcher.
Better. It's like you've always said. I mean, you go into that series thinking, oh, the Astros are dominating the Yankees because they were better than the Yankees.
Right, and they had better pitching. Like Framber Valdez, Justin Verlander, and Christian Javier, I'm sorry. They're better than Yamamoto, Flaherty, and Buehler.
They are.
They just are. I don't think that they – I think there's a huge difference between the pitching that shut the Yankees down in 22 than the pitching that's shutting the Yankees down right now.
This manager has showed this year he's not going to switch much up. Now, he did flip-flop a couple spots in the lineup and put Trevino in last night. I think tonight's about the fans changing what they usually do.
What should the fans do?
The ninth inning tonight.
In the ninth inning?
In the ninth? Why wait so long?
Let me finish.
Okay.
If the
this
team
better
is,
be brilliant.
It is.
It's not going to be brilliant.
It better be.
I promise Evan's going to think it's brilliant. If this team is losing,
yeah.
You're not to leave this game early. You're not. You bought tickets tonight. You're staying the full time. 50,000 people need to chant Juan Soto as loud as they can, like they did for Paul O'Neill in the 2001 World Series, not just to show Juan Soto how much they love him, to show how much we love him.
So think about this, Tiki. He's already given up on the year,
so this,
and he's thinking about free agency.
This is preemptive for 2025.
Yeah. What a message that would send to the owner tonight in the ninth inning if 50,000 people in unison chant Juan Soto's name to show him that's who we need back.
So two things about Juan Soto, and I know that whenever this series ends, good or bad, that will become the major baseball discussion for both teams in this town. I want to make this very clear because to me this hasn't changed since March. Juan Soto's going to the highest bidder. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, Hal Steinbrenner just needs to look down at his scorecard and look down at the performance of this team to know how important Juan Soto is.
He knows that. He knows how important he is statistically, financially, all of that. And he should know the fans love him very much. But that's a message to the owner that we're not going to tolerate Juan Soto not being a Yankee next year and you not being the highest bidder after we all plunked down $1,000 for tickets.
If the Yankees,
and I say we all with my free ticket.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. As he didn't pay a dime. If the Yankees are losing in the ninth inning by a lot, people are going to leave. Like, I understand what you're trying to do.
Because they don't want to see the celebration. They don't want to hear it.
They don't want to see the celebration. Right. It's late at night. People are tired. Like,
you can leave in the bottom of the ninth.
What was that?
You can leave in the bottom of the ninth. Remember, it's during the dot while he's in the outfield, top of the ninth.
I got you. But if the game's out of reach, they're gone. I'll never forget this because this haunts my dreams. And when the Mets lost the World Series to Kansas City, it was an extra inning game, but the Royals scored, I think it was 5 runs in the extra innings, right? So the game became clearly over.
Yeah.
The place emptied out. Now, I do not leave. My dad doesn't leave. We stayed. By the time the Royals won the World Series, there was nobody in the building except for the Royal fans who traveled from Kansas City.
And how many were they? Was it significant? I can't imagine that it was.
I would say it was a couple of thousand people, but when no Met fans are there anymore, it feels significant. So if that happened here, you'd feel the Dodgers.
I mean, there's not going to be a couple of thousand. It's going to be like 1,000.
Maybe 1,000.
Aaron Boone has done something to lineups.
Here we go. He decided to pull an Evan. He said, the world's going to end and I'm going to dig. Ladies and gentlemen, what did Aaron Boone do? Sean Morash has the answer.
Before I say this and give you the read, I will just preface it by saying the word pissed off doesn't begin to describe what I feel
now.
Wow. Okay.
Yankee starting lineups are brought to you by Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees, and by Casamigos Tequila, brought to you by those who drink it. I'm almost so pissed off I don't want to read this.
Really? Okay. That pissed off?
I am. I am.
What could he have possibly
This manager done? Is so clueless. Here we go.
Okay.
Leading off at second is Gleyber Torres.
No change.
No change.
Batting second in right field is Juan Soto.
No change.
Batting third in center field is Aaron Judge.
No change.
Cleaning up at third base is Jazz Chisholm Jr.
Chisholm!
Come on.
Batting fifth, your DH, Giancarlo Stanton. Batting sixth at first base, Anthony Rizzo. Batting seventh at shortstop is Anthony Volpe. Batting eighth, your catcher, Austin Wells. Batting ninth and left is Alex Verdugo with Luis Hill on the hill.
So he did nothing!
No.
He flip-flopped Jazz and Giancarlo.
Why does that piss you off?
Allow me for a second.
Yes. Sean's getting very...
There are two guys this entire postseason in this entire series who you know you can count on and put the fear of God in pitchers. Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton. I have seen a couple times now Gleyber Torres make the last out of a game waiting for Juan Soto to get there. Why would you slide Giancarlo Stanton even further down the lineup and bat him fifth? And with all due respect to Jazz Chisholm Jr., it's blind luck when he makes contact at this point. To have Aaron Judge struggling and then go, you know what we're going to do? Forget the protection with Giancarlo. Let's give you another automatic out behind you.
Well, yeah. Well, it's frustrating because it also puts Giancarlo Stanton in a position to not have anyone to drive in.
And what kind of message is this to that Yankee team and Giancarlo Stanton? Yesterday, defiantly, we can't move Aaron Judge. No. He's got to stay right there. But you could move the MVP of the entire freaking postseason down to fifth beyond a guy who can't hit the broadside of a barn? What is this crap?
No, I see why you're pissed now.
I can't argue with you, man. Giancarlo had two hits last night.
This sucks, man.
And this was the lineup prior.
Yeah, they were being no hit until he hit a double.
That's right. He had that double in the fourth inning, and that's, of course, when he got thrown out at the plate when Anthony Volpe had that base hit in the fourth inning. This lineup of Giancarlo batting fifth was a thing prior to Game 5 of the ALCS, and it was something I was screaming about. I was arguing about it. Now, you actually defended Boone, but I was all over this. Hey, you got to hit Stanton cleanup. What made over the last four games, Game 5 of the ALCS and these three games of the World Series where Giancarlo continues to hit, what would make Aaron Boone go back to what he had been doing prior to that?
Well, I'm trying to think logically why you would do that.
It's to break up the lefties, but he's overthinking it.
Yeah, but forget the lefty-righty thing. If someone's hitting right now, they're hitting right now. It doesn't matter. And by the way, you can't predict it because Dave Roberts is throwing out a bullpen game today. You have no idea who's coming in after. I don't know who's starting this game tonight, but you have no idea who's going to be pitching second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth inning. You have no idea. So breaking up the lefties does nothing for you.
And what happened last night late in the game? What did Aaron Judge actually do as the night got late?
He walked.
Now, picture that happening. Two outs, Judge actually walks, and it's Jazz Chisholm instead of Giancarlo with a bat in his head.
I don't like it. I didn't like it 5 days ago when he was having Giancarlo bat fifth, and I hate it now, especially since Stanton hasn't even cooled off.
It almost feels like, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have Jazz bunt? You're going to have him bunt for a base hit?
Nah, but you know what?
So you don't get out of the first inning, you start the second inning, and it's Jazz Chisholm, and you get on base, so maybe, I mean, like, I'm just trying to speculate why he would do this.
I'm going to give you the why, and you're going to hate me for it, but just remember I'm the messenger.
Go ahead.
I'm not the decider. If it was up to me, Giancarlo would be hitting cleanup. It is splitting up the lefties, knowing it's a bullpen game, and knowing that Vesia and Banda, the two lefties in the Dodger bullpen, are going to get into this game, and you make it easier for Dave Roberts when you've got lefties bunched together. By the way, I'm giving you the facts. That, to me, is not enough of a reason to not have my best hitter batting cleanup. So it's a mistake, and I don't get it. I didn't get it in the ALCS,
so
why would I get it now?
Yankee season on the line. Here comes a spreadsheet to make the decisions.
Well, it's going back to what they did early in the ALCS and the division series, and I didn't like it then.
These are the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're up 3-0. Your best hitter right now is Giancarlo Stanton. You don't slide him down the order.
Yeah.
Well, lefty-righty, lefty-righty.
We got
sister's ass.
We got the answer to the question that I posed earlier.
Yeah, so he's just going to the bar.
Yeah. The world's about to end. What are you going to do?
He ain't digging.
Aaron Boone has decided, I'm going to pretty much do the same thing. What most of us would do is try something. Like, I want to make this clear, and I feel bad I'm bringing up A-Rod a lot, but I think he's been a part of this a lot. I hated when Joe Torre batted him eighth. I didn't like it. I thought it was a panic move. Right. I thought it was a stupid move. But what I appreciate about it was Joe Torre tried something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I didn't like it, because I didn't like it.
Right.
I thought that it was panicky and it was insulting. But he tried.
Yeah, this isn't panicky because of what's at stake.
It's the opposite of it, though.
This is your last two. This could be your last game of the season. And you're just running it back. Let's do the same thing.
Yes.
And by the way, it's all good, guys. It's all in front of us, man. We still got four more games.
Everything's right here in front of us. Thanksgiving and Christmas.
And no one wants to hear what Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone may feed you if this doesn't go well tonight. Which is, hey, we were four wins away from a
championship. They were pretty good.
Like, no one wants to hear
that. It's a crapshoot.
It's true that you're four wins away from a championship.
You were in the championship and you did nothing.
Well, but he said that in the ALCS.
I understand that.
Four wins away from the World Series.
I understand that.
Let's get back to your phone calls. Let's go to Mitchell in Fort Lee. What's up, Mitch?
Hi, guys. A few things. Number one, I was at the game last night. When I left at 2 o'clock in the afternoon from Fort Lee, I made it to the stadium by 40 minutes or so. I was in the stadium because I found out, because I'm a season ticket holder, that if you go through the Hard Rock Cafe, when they open, the bar is open, the restaurant's open, you don't have to wait in line. But last night, you had to have reservations. But after that, 5 o'clock, they opened the bar, you walked right in. That's number one. Number two, I was at, before the game started, the crowd was going crazy. They were, electrifying and everything else. But as soon as Schmidt gave the walk, and then he gave up to run homer to Freeman, it was a complete disaster. The stadium just shut down completely, and it was a dead silence until the ninth inning. It was completely crazy. Okay, number three, Boone, like you guys were talking about Boone, the umpire was calling balls, strikes for their balls, and he didn't do it. He just sat there in the dugout. I'm in right field in section 107, row 1. I can't, see everything great, but I can see it enough. Plus, I put on my phone, and he just sat there like he didn't do anything. And
Mitch, I thought about this for a second. So Gleyber Torres got screwed. I think we all know that, right?
Right, he did.
Okay, it was clearly not a strike. It was way too high, and I thought that overall, Mark Carlson, I'm trying to remember. Let me look at my scorecard. That's why I score games. Mark Carlson was the home plate umpire. By the way,
Was he on that list?
Extreme hitter friendly, which is sort of the case.
Well, maybe he overcorrected.
Yeah, maybe. But that pitch to Gleyber was not a strike. We all know that. But earlier in the game, and it turned out not to matter because I think Mookie flied out right after, there was a pitch right down the middle that he missed on Mookie Betts, which was extreme hitter friendly.
Yeah.
Because it was clearly a strike. So I thought Mark Carlson had a tough night. But Mitch brings up a great point, or at least an interesting point. Aaron Boone is known for a few things. And one of the things I really like about Aaron is that he is going to tell an umpire when they suck. And he'll get run. He gets run more than anybody else. And when Gleyber struck out on that pitch, I was surprised that Boone didn't boon. That Boone didn't say, you know what, I know it's the World Series, but I got to try something. So let me go back to my bag of regular season tricks by getting run out of this game.
Yeah.
And I did think about it for a little bit, like, why not? You do it in the middle of May.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do it now on an egregious strike three?
I would have loved if he did it. But you know what? It wasn't a Sunday afternoon versus the Royals, so why do the fake enthusiasm? So.
Well, I never thought it was fake, though. I always thought that
it was genuine. I didn't think so either, but how do you not work up anger at this point? The whole family's angry.
He doesn't get upset. And that's the problem.
But he does during the regular season.
Yeah, that's what Evan's saying.
At umpires, not at his players.
That's what I'm talking about more at his players.
Yeah. I knew that.
He's not holding his guys accountable, and it's clear. Maybe because it's Aaron Judge and he's the captain, but, I mean, even the best players need to be coached.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Let's go to Jim in Elmont, New York. What's up, Jim?
Good afternoon, guys. Question. Do you go for the shovel first or your scorecards? Anyway, I would like to. You have with Aaron Judge. Could you picture Billy Martin in 77, 78 in the postseason fielding questions, and they say, "What's up with Reggie?" Well, Reggie's still trying to get his swing in. He's going into the batting cage and working on things. When it came the big moment, that's why he got the moniker of Mr. October. He rose to the occasion. He's known for actually strikeout against Bob Welsh. He battled him. How about last night? Because I actually texted my brother your point at the beginning of the show. The down 2-0, I texted my brother, if a guy gets on, Judge to run homer, changes the whole energy of the game.
Yeah.
So I said, how about when he swings through that pitch, he goes down, turn around, throws a pebble to the side, gives a Craig Carton, okay, gets back in, hits one 450 feet, and it changes the whole energy of the game. I've been waiting for his whole career, postseason career, for the signature moment. Stanton stamped his self in Yankee lore with the Cleveland series. Soto with his performance, and especially, obviously, the three-run home and a move you want.
Right.
To the World Series. You're waiting for his career for the signature game or the signature series. You look at a guy like Derek Jeter and back to Reggie.
Right.
Completely different hitters, but they raised their game when the spotlight was the brightest.
Well, Jim,
what you're asking Aaron Judge,
that's exactly what, you said exactly what I was thinking yesterday. In big moments, the best players have to make the best plays, the biggest plays. Big players make big plays in big moments. And over the course of the history of sport, you've seen that for the guys that we revere. And again, this is why it's so hard with Judge, because we're going to revere him because he's so damn good. And he elicits this excitement out of you. But in this moment, which is the biggest of his career, let's face it, he's not big.
And I think what's scary, and I hate to be dark, but again, I've said the same thing about the Mets, so I come from a very consistent place with this. I don't know if he's ever going to get this opportunity again. And that may sound dark.
I'm different on that because I think the Yankees will do what it takes to get back to this point.
Well,
now, obviously, that starts with signing Juan Soto, and we're thinking future discussions and conversations. But I can't see the Yankees not getting back to the playoffs and into the World Series next 5 years.
I'm not saying playoffs. I'm not saying they'll never be in the postseason again. I'm saying that for Aaron Judge to redefine himself, he can't just have a good division series against the Guardians.
I understand
that. He needs to succeed in
the
World Series. And they haven't been in a World Series in 15 years.
Yeah,
what makes you think they'd be back next year?
If they sign Juan Soto, which I'm assuming they will, and they have some of these young players start to pop and do the things that they expected to do, and they spin wisely, not flippantly and stupidly, in free agency, which you assume that a Yankee team would, they'll have another opportunity. At least you got to believe that.
Logic says they'll have it, but
of course,
they haven't had it in 15 years.
They haven't, but it's been a weird set of circumstances. They were blocked, to be honest with you.
How do you know another team won't block them? How do you know the Orioles won't figure out their issues?
I don't, but I know specifically what blocked them before, and it was the Houston Astros. They were just a better team.
That is my worry, though, around Judge, that you're right. They'll be in the playoffs again. I don't want anyone to think I'm like predicting the Yankees will never see the playoffs again. I think in this day and age, he almost have to suck not to make the playoffs.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's the World Series.
But
it's getting back to this moment.
I can't help but go back to what we started our show with. If you missed it, you can rewind on the Odyssey app. You start thinking about how Aaron Boone has to evolve as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
He's been the same way the entirety of his tenure here. And it doesn't work. It works for the regular season where you can be calm. It's 162 games, and it's mind-numbing from a player standpoint and an organizational standpoint, and a coaching standpoint, and a trainer standpoint, everything standpoint. So you got to be calm. Right, you gotta be. Let's take it a day at a time. Let's not get too worked up and out of whack. But there comes moments in a season, and especially in the postseason, where that has to change. And if you just keep doing the status quo, you're gonna get the status quo, which is average, and it's not good enough, especially against teams like the Dodgers, who are going to spend $1 billion every single year to bring the best player to their organization. You know that's happening. Hell, we talked about it yesterday. This team wants Juan Soto. This Dodger team that's about to sweep the damn Yankees want to go get Juan Soto. Why? Oh, they're not good enough. Right? I mean, are you serious? So being average isn't okay just because you're better than everybody else in the regular season.
Just for the record, I do not believe the Dodgers want Juan Soto. I believe they're playing dirty tricks with the Yankees creating fake rumors that they're interested in their best player as gamesmanship.
I'm more in line with Harold Reynolds. I don't think it's going to be a $700 million contract. I know it's out there, but even if it is, they'll spend it.
Yeah.
Because it'll be worth it to them.
It's so weird, man. For 6 months, I have tried very passionately to say to you and everybody else, we'll have the Soto discussion,
mm-hmm.
but we're not there yet. What's scary is we may be there at 11:30 tonight.
Right.
We may have finally entered the Soto discussion. We'll get back to your Yankee calls coming up. We'll prepare you for Game 4 of the World Series. But last night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a swing state, the New York Giants blew an opportunity. We'll go through how they did it. Plus, Tiki's got a football splain, a few things that happened last night that I still can't wrap my head around. Toll-free number is 888-808-1019. Evan and Tiki, we are live from Yankee Stadium right until the pregame show at 7:25.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it. At shortstop, Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
We are live from Yankee Stadium, getting you set for Game 4 of the World Series between the Yankees and the LA Dodgers. A lot more to get to around tonight's game, what happened last night, and if the Yankees can pull off a miracle. And really rewrite baseball history by coming back from 3-0 down in the World Series. But last night, the New York football Giants could have won a game. I want to start right there. That, to me, is headline number one. And I didn't think that when we sat here and we quickly previewed the game. I thought it would be close. I thought the Steelers would pull away late. I guess I was sort of right about that. Thank you very much,
bottle of water. They didn't really pull away.
They did in terms of, I think, after that special teams touchdown, and then after Calvin Austin, same guy, scored the touchdown to put him up by two scores, I thought they pulled away in the sense that coming back never felt realistic.
Yeah, but they were only a score away. And so the challenge is the Giants can't score touchdowns. That's what it comes down to.
You're right.
Save for Tyrone Tracy, who, by the way, has been a marvel.
Amazing.
Ever since the Seattle Seahawks game where he got his first start. He's been fantastic. And I look at some of the runs, the touchdown run in particular. He sets that up perfectly. If he takes that cut that he ultimately took right away, because it's wide open, he could have done it right away, he gets tackled for, 8-yard gain. He held it until the last moment and then two-stepped it into that hole and outran everybody.
I see the glee in your eye, too.
Dude, I love good running back football.
Yeah?
And you don't get it a lot because guys are too single-minded. I see hole, I hit hole.
Right.
But it's different than that. It's like you got to set the guy up or set the defense up. And by staying on his course, he pulled the safety into the hole. Out of the hole. And then he got back into it and outran him. So Tyrone Tracy was great. Everything else felt, not bad, but just kind of like,
but it was enough to be in the game.
I'm just let down. Like,
right.
Come on. Make that play. Don't have that penalty. Get set, Malik Nabers, before you go in motion and you negate a touchdown, the one touchdown that Daniel Jones has thrown in the last 5,000 years on prime time. So it felt like they played better, but they're just not good enough in moments.
Well, it feels like they make a lot of little mistakes. Like Malik Nabers, and I know that everybody loves him, but it's a weekly thing with a big drop.
Yeah, he did have a big drop.
It's a weekly thing.
That was a rough one.
Now, you need to.
And by the way, that was man coverage, and he beat the hell out of the corner at the line of scrimmage. If he catches that ball, he might score.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was not only a first down conversion, but
yes.
You're right. He can end up scoring on that. So there's two plays in this game that really jump out at me that you need to explain to me.
Go ahead.
Number one, and you kind of touched on it, was the Manhurts touchdown that got wiped out
right. Because
of an illegal shift on Malik Nabers. They ended up settling for a field goal, tied the game up at 6. Basically, the Giants and Steelers were playing a little patty cat.
Yeah.
All right, 3-0, 3-3, 6-3, 6-6. What was that? Was that Malik Nabers?
No.
Take me through what the hell went wrong on that.
So, first of all, Malik Nabers came out. He's young. He's a rookie. He came out to the wrong side. So, he gets pushed to the other side. Ultimately, he's coming back in motion. And this happened twice. And it happened on the strip sack at the end of the game, which we'll get to in a second. But the formation coming out of the huddle was wrong. And so, Darius Slayton tells him to go to the other side. He's got to go to the other side and get set. Because Darius Slayton is also still moving. He's still getting set, checking the line of scrimmage. He's on the line of scrimmage. But he never goes over there and gets set.
Right.
So he runs over there, basically taps where he's supposed to be, and comes back in motion to the offensive right. So he never got set. And because Darius Slayton was also moving, that's not what they called, you got to be set for at least
a
beat.
But is that on Daniel Jones for snapping the football at that moment?
No.
That's all on Nabers.
He's supposed to be in motion as the ball is snapped. He never got set originally. You know what I mean? So he started out on the offensive right. Darius Slayton says, go
left.
So
the mistake isn't him moving as the ball is snapped?
The mistake is him coming out of the huddle to the wrong side of the formation.
Yeah,
and then he has to go back to the left side of the formation. But when he gets there, he needs to get set.
Okay.
You have to be set. And then he doesn't, and he comes back to the right side of the motion. Ball is snapped. He's running an over route. The defense crowds to him. Manhurts is wide open. Easy throw for Daniel Jones. Touchdown. It should have propelled them into a victory in whatever that stadium is called down there in Pittsburgh.
Akron.
And so, yes, exactly. But it didn't. And it was another self-inflicted wound on this team.
It's just
these little things over and over and over and over again. It drives you insane. And especially if you know what it is, like you see it happening as it's happening, you're like, oh, like get away with it. And they just never do.
So should Malik know better, even though he's been in the league for 5 minutes?
No. This is on the play call, right?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. This is on Daniel Jones when he sees him coming out of the huddle. Malik, you're here. right? And so get set. Now I'll start the cadence. Now I'll bring you in motion. Right, because it's all quarterback led, and Dabes threw him under the bus at the end of the game. We all, if you didn't listen to it, you heard it. Brian Daboll was talking about the strip sack with T.J. Watt. So what was happening? T.J. Watt always lines up on offensive right. He's always on the offensive right. But in this game, he'd started jacking around. So he'd go over to the left side and be like, "All right, I'm gonna rush on this kid that the Giants just found on the practice squad of the San Francisco 49ers." And so how Dabes combated that was he would have Theo Johnson start one side, and if T.J. Watt was on the other side, he would motion him to T.J. Watt's side.
Right.
So he's chipping. He's chipping, and then he's a check down. Chip, check down. That's all Theo Johnson was doing in a lot of the plays last night. And on that last strip sack, Daniel Jones is rushing, and so instead of moving Theo Johnson from the left side to the right side so he can chip on T.J. Watt, T.J. Watt's over there one-on-one on Jermaine Illuminor and just runs right by him for a strip sack.
Yeah.
And so, these are procedural things. This isn't like my guy is better than your guy type of thing. I mean, in that case, T.J. Watt is.
He's a great player,
But you've mitigated it by giving you an answer. And Daniel Jones didn't execute the answer the correct way.
Interesting.
So.
Was he right for throwing him under the bus?
It just tells me that he's tired of the failures.
Yeah. Well, I think Giant fans are too.
It's not, is he right or wrong for throwing him under the bus, but right now people will sit there and scream and yell and say, Dave is a terrible coach. He's garbage. And he's not, right? He actually does some really smart things. The 12 men on the field penalty, that was amazing.
Yeah, that was smart.
Because
they didn't notice it.
It's because the broadcast didn't pick it up. The Manning cast picked it up.
Yeah, I even picked it up. You know why I picked it up? Because Belichick used to do it.
Right.
And I remember thinking at the time, hey, you got to find a way to stop the clock, and the Steelers are only 2-3 yards away from a first down. So I agree with you. I thought that was smart.
You gave up too many yards on first down. Give them the first down,
right,
and then start over again. It happened in Oregon 2 weeks ago. That's why it was recently fresh in people's mind. And so
I remember Bill doing it a bunch of times.
So it's like a loophole. Dave took advantage of it.
Right.
The one thing I didn't like play call wise was the 2-point conversion.
All right. So let me get to that. This 2-point, and this is a very tiny thing that bothers me. And I don't know if this bothers Sean as a diehard Giant fan. I don't think this is going to bother you, Teak. You're above this. But that play call, whatever it was, and I want you to explain it in a second. But what bothered me was that, everybody's laughing at the Giants again. And I can relate to this because that's what bothers me about the Jets. Like, it's bad enough to lose. I don't like being laughed at.
Yeah.
I want to give you two examples of not just a broadcaster, but a guy who hates the Giants laughing at the Giants. Here's Troy Aikman twice chuckling about the 2-point play call. I'm not even a Giant fan, and this stuff bothers me because I know if this happened to the Jets, I'd lose my mind. Here's Troy Aikman chuckling the first time.
That's embarrassing. That play right there could not have a better opportunity of at least coming up with a 2-point play.
Yeah, here's Troy Aikman again laughing because once wasn't enough.
And, look, I mean...
Like, I think that bothers me. Before you explain what that play call was, does that annoy you,
yes,
Sean, or is that me being too sensitive?
Yes, and I've liked Troy Aikman for a long time. By the way, Tiki's already explained two things that I was angry at the refs about that now I no longer am, so get Tiki on Monday Night Football, that's first and yes, foremost. Second of all, yeah, Troy, you know, if you've ever done a Cowboy game where, you know, Romo drops a snap and you give up 54 points to the Lions, are you chuckling like that in that moment? That does bother me. Yes,
right,
enough. But the Giants also, and Tiki will explain, put themselves in that spot a million procedural penalties all day long.
Yeah.
Maybe now's not the time for the picket fence play.
So, right. So I love going for two, by the way. But what the hell was that?
By the way, it's brilliant.
Going for two.
It's a brilliant play call.
Oh, the play. Well, what was it?
So Sean nailed it. It's a picket fence play call.
Right.
You can't do it on the road.
Because of the sound?
Because the linemen can't hear, and so they have to look into the center to see the snap.
Hmm.
They can't hear Daniel Jones.
Okay.
So the only way that they can see when to go is when this ball, and they have to look in to see the snap.
Hmm.
Right? And I forgot who the defender was for the Steelers. He also has to look in, but he knows where he's trying to go. Yeah, I think it was Highsmith.
Yeah.
He knows where he's trying to go. So everybody's looking in. Go look at that again. Everybody is looking in at the snap. As soon as Daniel Jones snaps that ball, Highsmith splits them, and the linemen get their eyes back around, and it's too late.
Right.
Right? I mean, and the thing that frustrated me watching it is that Devin Singletary is there, And as soon as he sees Highsmith, he should have cut him. Mm-hmm. Right? Just cut him. Just right. Cut his knees out from under him so that your offensive line has a chance. The reason I say it's a brilliant play is because if Highsmith doesn't disrupt that, there's two defenders over there. There's five offensive linemen and Malik Nabers and Devin Singletary over there. Like, if that ball gets completed and Highsmith is cut, there's no way the Steelers are stopping it. And so it's a brilliant play design. You just can't do it on the road.
So why'd you try it on the road then?
He just wasn't thinking. I mean, I got to be honest. He just wasn't thinking about it.
He had this great tool in the toolbox and said, screw it, I got to try it now.
Certain things matter about, like, the procedure, like the sound that you hear. You got to be able to look at the defense and know exactly where you're going. As soon as you hear the cadence, then you fire out and you go. But when you got to all look in, all of them, all five of those, they're all looking back at the snap because they have to.
Right.
And so the Pittsburgh Steeler defender, I think it's Highsmith, took advantage of it and shot the gap. Singletary didn't cut him, and it was a blown-up play from the beginning.
I got to be honest. I disagree with both of you on something.
What?
And that play call might be brilliant at home. I trust Tiki on that. I know what you guys are saying, and I've heard the numbers. I am so tired of this two-point try down two touchdowns crap.
Yeah, listen, I hate that too.
Here's why. I'll tell you this. Why? Because here is the inherent problem with analytics in football.
Yes.
It's the truth.
It's not analytics. It's math.
Okay. Math in football.
When people don't
football.
Like things, they just call it analytics.
Okay.
It's math, bro.
Call it whatever you want. Analytics. Arithmetic, math, analytics. Here's the problem. Just hear me out.
Okay.
When you base the math on things, you're assuming that all 32 NFL teams, combined with the opponents they are playing and the environment they're in, are created equal. The New York Giants are not Josh Allen-led, Patrick Mahomes-led, Lamar Jackson-led. Hell, they don't even have a left tackle right now. So in that scenario, when you go for two on the road in Pittsburgh with two great edge pass rushers and no tackle play and a quarterback who hasn't thrown a touchdown since basically I was 3 years old, that is not the time to run a two-point conversion try. What you do there is you kick the extra point. Then when you come back and if you do get that other example, like you're going down the field, he doesn't throw the pick.
Then you go for two.
Then you want to pull the Tennessee move of 2 years ago and say, we have momentum, Pittsburgh can't believe we just punched them. Then go for two, fine. I hate the idea of, well, if you miss, then you'll definitely get it next time because math says you will.
Well, you'll go for two the next time.
BS. Yeah, but in Pittsburgh, with that giant offense, that was not the time to go for two.
This is one of those things that I disagree with as well with Sean because it's math and it's common. It's commonly accepted amongst the stat heads in the NFL that if you're down to two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, you go for two because the probability of stopping a two-point conversion twice is so much lower, or it's lower.
Right,
the second time it's lower, and so if you don't get it the first time, then you can go for two the second time, and the probability of the defense stopping it a second time is lower than the first time. But what you do is you create this: we can win if we do get the two-point conversion with just an extra point.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, so walk me through this, because Sean already answered this. I'm curious about your perspective.
Yeah.
If you kick the extra point and then you score a touchdown
later. You're still down
later,
a touchdown.
Okay. And then you score a touchdown later, would you be in Sean's camp of, I got to go for the win?
Well, it depends on it depends on if you're like Dabes against the Tennessee Titans, where you're just like, F it. I want to win this game right now, and I trust Saquon Barkley, even though we don't have that guy right now. Even though I would trust Tyrone Tracy right now. I trust Saquon Barkley is going to get in the end zone with this perfectly designed play call. So, you know what? Screw it. Let's win right now. I would rather do that 99 out of 100 times than go for two on the penultimate touchdown and then hopefully that gives me a chance to win with just an extra point on the second touchdown.
I agree with you that all circumstances are a little bit different. In general, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are a very good football team.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people love to crap on the quarterback. I get it. I think their defense is as talented as any team in the league.
He's played really well, Russell Wilson.
He has, and I think he deserves credit for that.
Right.
That's why people love to crap on him, but the reality is Russ has played well. But I'm not even talking about Russ. I'm talking about this Steeler defense and playing in that building and how difficult it is. So in general, I think if I am trying to pull off an upset against the Steelers, I got to go for the win. I can't play for overtime.
Okay, go for the win the second time.
Yeah, but why not go for the two now? Well, and if I do fail, I go for two again just to get that tie.
Because think about it. So you get the touch. First of all,
giving myself two chances.
First of all, the Giants don't score touchdowns.
That's why I go for two.
So you get lucky because Tyrone Tracy beasts a 45-yarder. And it's like, all right, let's get within a touchdown, not let's put ourselves in positions to win the game. And so for me, I think it's giving yourself too much credit because Tyrone Tracy broke a bit.
No, Batik, you just said something. I don't even think you thought about it this way, but you said it. You're like, Giants don't score touchdowns.
Yeah.
I agree with you. If I convert on the two-point conversion, how many points am I down? I'm down 6.
Of course.
All of a sudden, I could kick 2 field goals to tie the game.
But the problem is what you're discounting what you're forgetting to account for is at that point it's a possession game. Like you're going to run out of possessions. And so
potentially yes,
11 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
But I've got 11 minutes in the fourth quarter. It's not like there's 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Not when you're not stopping the run.
I've got time. Yeah, and I thought that was a mistake Tomlin made. I thought he actually got away from the run, believe it or not. I like the idea of being aggressive and going for 2, especially when I don't think you're as good. The Steelers are a very good football team. And I think that sometimes you've got to force the issue.
We can agree to disagree on this because to me, like their best opportunity, if they're going to try to win the game, is to score that touchdown, get within a touchdown, hopefully score another touchdown, which probably is desperation on fourth down some point as on your next drive, and then make it decision about whether or not you're going to go for 2 or you're going to go into overtime. And you don't want to go into overtime because you can't stop or you haven't stopped that point, the Steelers' offense.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. Now, I will say, Evan, I've gotten a text from our leader, Tommy Lugauer.
Yes.
He said that he had told you earlier he's requested an audience with Ian Kiki on this.
Yes. Tommy Lugauer has requested a
sit-down.
A sit-down with one Tiki Barber and Sean Morris. So when we come back, Tommy's got a lot to say that apparently, because I've been briefed on the subject, and I may not fully agree with Tommy, but I will agree with this. He may anger Tiki Barber. I think Tommy Lugauer may anger Tiki Barber with some of his opinions concerning the head coach of this football team and the New York Giants in general. We'll address that next, plus the benching of Tay Banks, and we'll get back to your Yankee calls as we prepare you for Game 4 of the World Series. There's a lot to do live from Yankee Stadium, but Giant fans, you're involved as well. You had a football game last night that you could have won. 888-808-1019.